You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, December 20, 2017.
40% of Americans, that is close to two-fifths of Americans, said it is okay for a photographer to deny service to interracial couples, a protected class.
Indiana University Bloomington professor Brian Powell speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about a study which gauged Americans' rationales when it comes to the right to deny service to same-sex couples. That's coming up on today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, what to watch out for during the holidays. That's coming up on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
A small plane crash in southeastern Indiana claimed three lives over the weekend. The Indiana State Police yesterday confirmed the identities of the victims of the crash, which occurred outside of Oldenburg, Indiana, on Saturday night. The dead are listed as National Transportation Safety Board Virginia Training Center Director Dr. Paul Schuda, his friend Dr. Louis Cantalena, and Cantalena's daughter Dr. Amy Cantalena. Tim Sorensen is the NTSB accident investigator for the crash, and he says the investigation has just gotten started.
The investigation will proceed as we go along, and once the case is complete, a formal report will be released. However, that will be many months down the road once everything is complete and we're able to document our findings.
Sorensen says the Cessna light aircraft crashed into a heavily wooded ravine on Saturday night. He does not currently suspect foul weather to have played any impact on the crash.
Yes, my information is that it was closest to Oldenburg. It was in a sparsely populated residential area, and specifically the accident site was in a wooded kind of ravine depression area.
Louis Cantalena was reported as the pilot during the time of the crash. He and Schuda were both members of the Civil Air Patrol.
Monroe County commissioners are taking a first step in updating county code to reflect the 2007 ordinance regarding solid waste facilities. The 2007 ordinance lays out a process by which a proposal for a solid waste facility would be reviewed first by the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District Board. According to the 2007 ordinance, the board could recommend such a proposal to commissioners if it is supported by a needs assessment. The ordinance authorizes county commissioners to hold public hearings and ultimately authorize such a proposal. In their meeting this morning, commissioners unanimously approved amending Chapter 360 of the Monroe County Code regarding solid waste provisions to include references to the 2007 ordinance. County Attorney Dave Schilling says until now the 2007 ordinance was not referenced in the county code's solid waste provisions or health regulations.
So the hope is that if anybody in Monroe County wants to establish a solid waste facility, they'll check the health regulations and they will now see the ordinance requirement that has been there since 2007. And the intention is also to incorporate that 2007 ordinance into our planning code so that anybody that checks the land use tables about solid waste facilities will also be alerted to that requirement.
Schilling said definitions of terminology have been synced between the documents for consistency and gave examples.
Solid waste management means the systematic administration of activities that provide for collection, processing, disposal, so forth of solid waste. And then a solid waste management facility basically means those types of facilities that are involved in final disposal, like a landfill or incinerator, as well as transfer sites and transfer stations. And under these provisions, I think we've talked a little bit about sites dedicated solely for recycling drop-off. That would be a transfer site under our current provisions.
Businessman Robert Shaw has been vocal in his opposition to a West Side waste transfer station at previous commissioners' meetings. During public comment, Shaw asked that the county's planning and zoning ordinances also reference the 2007 ordinance. Commissioner Julie Thomas says this is just a first step.
I would say that just because this particular ordinance hasn't been referenced in the right portions, that it's not effective. It still is an effective ordinance, but I think this is about making sure that the public or anybody who wants to operate such a facility and go through the permitting process is aware of what they have to do, right? So this doesn't actually change the law, but it just creates a level of understanding that reaches health and all these other things. And so what we're going to vote on today is that short-term solution I talked about last week. There's a medium-range solution and a long-range solution, and we're continuing to work on that with planning. So you will see this continue to evolve, but really this is about, today is really about ensuring that there's clarity for somebody making a permit request.
Thomas did not provide any details on the longer-term solutions being developed. Monroe County Council member Cheryl Munson is the County Council's appointee to the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District Board of Directors. Munson says she is concerned about definitions, particularly the definition of need.
The Solid Waste District will have the responsibility of making an assessment of need when requested to do so by an applicant for a transfer facility. And there is no mention of what constitutes need with respect to that assessment. And that makes it very hard to consider, because there is a requirement in our contract for trash hauling that we cannot speak for or against any other transfer facility. So I think the assessment process can be fair and considerate without speaking for or against, but we need to know what variables that you all would like to hear about with respect to need.
Munson requested the definition of need be included in whatever longer-term remedies the commissioners are formulating. Commissioner Thomas said the Solid Waste Management District is the more appropriate entity to determine what factors contribute a need for solid waste facilities.
The City of Bloomington is gearing up to celebrate the 200th anniversary of Monroe County and the city's establishment. Bloomington Public Engagement Director Mary Catherine Carmichael says part of the celebration will include a new look for the city.
If you come to City Hall right now, you'll notice it looks a little bit different. We have our new bicentennial logo. We have decals on the front windows and the windows of each of the various departments. And you might notice that residents around town and city employees are starting to sport their bicentennial logo pins, kind of gearing up for the 200th anniversary of Monroe County's establishment and the City of Bloomington's establishment.
Carmichael also says the city has events planned throughout next year to celebrate the bicentennial.
So we're going to kick that off here at the city on New Year's Eve with a celebration. We'll be here at City Hall beginning at 5 p.m. and going until 7:30 p.m. All ages are welcome. Lots of exciting events are a part of that, including we'll have a mock midnight at 7 p.m. They'll be singing. We'll have several different activities. Trying to remember all the hors d'oeuvres, plenty of food. The whole thing is family friendly. So that's going to be a really neat evening. It'll be hard to miss. There'll be a special light installation out in front of City Hall that evening. So that's just the beginning. That's December 31st. And we've got a few other things, city events. Of course, we're partnering with the county on several initiatives as well.
Once again, the city's New Year's Eve Bicentennial Celebration takes place at City Hall from 5 to 7:30 p.m. December 31st.
The Federal Department of Housing, the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development is reporting decreases in the number of homeless individuals in Indiana this year. HUD's spot check on a single night in 2017 reports a decrease of 6.2% since a spot check last year. The department's findings also reported a decrease of 15.7% of homeless individuals in the state since 2010. Spokesperson Gina Rodriguez says HUD saw decreases throughout populations experiencing homelessness throughout the state over the past year.
We saw declines across Indiana in all of the different categories. So, for example, we have the families that with children that are experiencing homelessness in 2017 declined by 8.1% since last year and by almost 37% since 2010. We also saw declines with homeless veterans. And so in one single night in January, when the point-in-time count was conducted, 615 veterans were experiencing homelessness, and veteran homelessness declined by 7.2% across Indiana since January of last year. So it declined by 19.8% and by nearly 40% nationally since 2010. So that's a significant accomplishment there. And we also noted that chronic or long-term homelessness among individuals decreased by 9% since last year and by 37% since 2010.
HUD's national estimate is based upon data reported by approximately 3,000 cities and counties across the nation. Every year, on a single night in January, planning agencies called continuums of care and tens of thousands of volunteers seek to identify the number of individuals and families living in emergency shelters, transitional housing programs, and in unsheltered settings. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Americans seem to be evenly divided on whether a business should be able to deny service to same-sex couples. That's according to a study by Indiana University of Bloomington sociologists. IU professor Brian Powell found people who support denying service don't necessarily see it as a matter of religious freedom. Instead, Powell tells WFHB News Director Wes Martin that the study found people were more likely to support the denial of services to same-sex or interracial couples based on their libertarian beliefs in a free market. The study is published in Science Advances, a publication of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Powell says a representative sample of over 2,000 people were asked to respond to vignettes in which a photographer refused to take wedding pictures. In random versions of the vignette, the photographer was self-employed or worked for a chain business, the couple was same-sex or interracial, and the reason for denying service was religious or non-religious. Powell says that 2 in 5 respondents supported denying service to an interracial couple. Over half said a self-employed photographer should be able to refuse service to an interracial couple, while fewer than 1/4 said a corporation should be allowed to do so.
My collaborators, Landon Schnabel and Lauren Apgar, and I were really interested in understanding how does the public think about the denial of service to same-sex couples. We've heard so many different claims about what the denial of service means. We've heard the claim that denial of service is about protection of religious liberty. And we were really interested in finding out to what extent is that true. We also were interested in understanding whether or not people's views about denial of service is about individual businesses, or does it extend to corporations as well? Because the Supreme Court had a case involving Hobby Lobby that indicated that corporations, or what's known as closely held corporations, could have the same rights as individuals and deny things to different people. Finally, we were interested in whether or not people make a clear distinction between people's attitudes regarding denial of service to same-sex couples versus other groups. And we thought the obvious comparison would be interracial couples.
And why would that be an obvious comparison?
Just a couple of weeks ago, the Supreme Court was hearing a case about denial of service, in particular denial of service by a bakery to a same-sex couple. And in the discussion in the Supreme Court, people from both sides of the argument were bringing up the question of interracial couples. One side was saying interracial couples, if they shouldn't be denied service, well then same-sex couples should be treated exactly the same way. The other side said no, there are qualitative differences between the two groups. One reason people make this comparison is if we just go back 50 years ago, interracial couples were denied the same types of marital rights the same-sex couples were denied until just 2 years ago.
And can you talk about some of the findings of your study? We've talked briefly about what it is that your study was looking for. What did you end up discovering?
We first discovered that Americans do not distinguish between religious reasons and not religious reasons for denial of service. So when we gave a case in which someone denied service, a photographer denied service to a same-sex couple and said, I am doing this because I'm religious and I don't approve of same-sex marriage, people's responses to that question were no different than if the photographer said, I am not religious and I do not approve. Or in other words, despite the claims of many people that this is about religious, quote, freedom, people who believe you should deny service regardless of whether it's for religious reasons or not. This tells us that at least in the public's view, the debate about denial of service is not about religious liberty or religious freedom. A second finding is that people do distinguish between a self-employed photographer who says he's not going to give service versus a closely held corporation or a chain that says it's not going to deny service. In other words, even though the Supreme Court in certain cases have equated corporations or closely held corporations with persons, the American public does not. The third pattern, and we found this pattern to be really surprising, is that people's support for denial of service is greater for gay couples than for interracial couples. Now, that is not a surprising finding. But the surprising finding for us was across all the different types of scenarios we gave, 40% of Americans, that is close to two-fifths of Americans, said it is okay for a photographer to deny service to interracial couples, a protected class. What it does tell us is that the reasons that the public believes you should deny service has nothing to do with the legal claims that have been given regarding denial of service. Many people have made the argument that denial of service is about religious freedom. Our findings indicate that has nothing to do with the public view. Many people say that the denial of service by a photographer or a baker is about, you know, denial of freedom of expression or freedom of artistic expression or freedom of speech. The people in our sample almost never said anything like that. So one thing that our findings tell us is that How the public thinks about these issues, it has nothing to do with the types of arguments that have been used legally to justify the denial of service. That's one key point that I think is very important. The other point is it is surprising that so many people do believe you can deny service. It's about evenly split regarding same-sex couples. 53% say you can, 47% say you cannot. I don't think it's necessarily a sign of prejudicial attitudes. In fact, the sample, which is of 2,000 of Americans, a sample representing all different spheres of American lives, 60% of the sample was in favor of same-sex marriage. And I think that's really important. These were people who were not prejudiced in terms of their views about same-sex marriage, but they do believe that at least half of them believe that you can deny service. The reason why people often say you can deny service boils down to this general idea of libertarianism, that American businesses should be able to do what it wants. That in fact, the word that they kept on using, and this is a word that has kept on popping up, was the word anyone. You can deny service to anyone. In contrast, the people who say you can't deny service instead use the word everyone. To them, you need to treat everyone in the same fair manner. Another pattern that we found really surprising in terms of people's justifications is, and this was especially true among the people who said the person can deny service, but the respondent also believed was in favor of same-sex marriage. They often would say that what the photographer was doing was repugnant and often people use different language that was much more colorful than that. But they said he has the right to deny service, but in turn, people have the right to boycott the photographer. They have a right to tell other people, do not go to the photographer. In other words, for many people, the idea was that that photographers and other businesses that do discriminatory practices ultimately are going to lose out. And it's this view that in a market economy, discriminatory practices are not profitable and people then stop. Now, I think that's a very optimistic and naive view, and most research does not suggest that view is accurate, but it seems to be a key view of many Americans.
Dr. Powell, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with IU Professor Brian Powell.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your Consumer Watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, every week we've been talking about all the many, many ways fraudsters and crooks can rip you off. It's been an avalanche of bad news this year, starting with the fact that your personal information and mine has almost certainly already been stolen and is floating around out on the dark web. This means we all have to keep a close watch on our bank accounts, credit cards, credit rating, and every account now and probably forever. And of course, there's an endless cycle of cyber attacks, social media assaults, and telephone threats to worry about. But this is the holiday season, and it's time to take a break from the doom and gloom. Here's some actual good news for a change. To start with, last year, the authorities in India busted a huge telephone scam operation which was targeting Americans. In spite of the fact that a caller sounded like Apu on The Simpsons, way too many people believed his claim that he was from the IRS, and if they didn't cough up a lot of money, immediately he would have them arrested. The mastermind was one Sagar Thakkar, known endearingly as Shaggy, who was running 9 separate call centers employing hundreds of people and is only 24 years old. Some 70 people in India and another 20 in the U.S. have been arrested. Last October, the cops in Florida took down a couple of really nasty crooks. Joseph Anton Hilton and Adam Todd Foreman preyed on people who were worried about paying their mortgages. They claimed to be lawyers, which was a complete lie, and promised to fix people's finances for a hefty fee. Of course, they just kept the money, and most of their victims in several states, including New Jersey and Ohio, lost their homes. Even a lady who works for the Florida Department of Corrections found herself living in her car after she trusted these lowlifes. Hilton and Foreman are now in prison, and the real lawyer who defended them says they're very sorry. It's probably forgivable if you wonder whether they're sorry because they hurt so many people or because they got caught. And finally, there's a lovely new service available on the web that will fight those crummy spam emails you've been getting. NetSafe, a cybersecurity firm from New Zealand, now offers ReScam, a free automated chatbot that will reply to scammers for you with messages like, "Dear Illuminati, I'd love to join your secret conspiracy. Do you have a bingo night?" That will take up the crook's time and keep them busy until they give up and take your email off their list. Got some damn scam? Forward the message to me at rescam.com. That's me, M-E, at R-E-S-C-A-M, rescam.com. And the chatbot will take it from there. Here's hoping you have a much better holiday than the con artists do. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.